Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh. I travel around Orlando talking to entrepreneurs to hear their story, to give you, the audience, this hope, inspiration, and education for those who are looking to build something of their own. So on today's show, we're going to actually have a conversation with two co-founders, right? And they're building a real estate technology company here in Orlando, Florida, that's doing some amazing stuff. And I want to introduce them to you. So ladies and gentlemen, welcome Cole and Chris, the co-founders of Sensory, a real estate technology company. And I'm going to let them tell you a little bit about it, but I'm just bringing them on the show. So you're going to be hearing, for those listening into the audience, you're going to be hearing two people's voices and myself. And we're just going to go back and forth, learn their story, a little bit about some of their ups and downs, and some of the cool stuff they're working on. So let's start with Cole. Cole, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Chris, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show.
Hey, thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So, you know, let's start with, you know, who, and maybe we can go like round robin kind of conversation, but, you know, how did you guys start the concept of this, right? Who wants to take that one?
This is Chris speaking. I'll go ahead and take that one. I had a kind of loosely related idea when I was finishing up grad school. I was optimistic in terms of, you know, the future and looking at, you know, where I was going to live and all that type of stuff. And I'm a mapping guy by trade. I also do urban planning. That was my degree. And so I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if I could compile all of this information in one spot and help people kind of find a place that's good for them, based not only on, you know, the house or apartment or whatever itself, but the surrounding area. You know, if you're really into parks, I can help you with that, or nightlife or whatever. So that's sort of how the idea was born.
Okay. So, Cole, why don't you tell us, you know, what Sensory is? So kind of like that's how it was birthed and you know, kind of thought up, you know, what is it? What did it, you know, what did it become?
So Sensory is basically a neighborhood matchmaking platform. And not in the dating sense. We target people who are moving to Orlando, who aren't very familiar with the area, and need help figuring out which neighborhoods to live in. So when they come to our service, our website, they'll tell us a little bit about themselves, they'll tell us about the type of neighborhood that they'd like to live in, and about their move, and then we'll run their answers through an algorithm that we've written and show them the best neighborhoods for their lifestyle.
Now, this is kind of funny. When you tell people that it's a real estate neighborhood matchmaking, you know, what kind of questions or what kind of unique thoughts do people come to the table with?
So sometimes we do get, and that's why I prefaced not dating. The most common mistake we get is, oh, you're doing matchmaking in neighborhoods for people to go on dates. And we're like, oh, no, not necessarily matching people together, but matching a person with a geographic area within Orlando, i.e. a neighborhood.
Got it. So if someone's out there looking and they're going, hey, there's this really good looking person down the street, I'd really like, this isn't the app for you, ladies and gentlemen.
No, okay. Not at all.
Got it. Okay. So, you know, with the background in mapping, you know, from Chris and urban planning and really being able to look at things at, from a 50,000 foot view to say, this is where parks are, this is where nightlife is, this is, you know, these kind of things. What is your background, Cole?
My formal education was in finance. And then I worked a corporate finance gig for roughly 8-9 years. On the side, I was always kind of dabbling. Like Chris mentioned, before Sensory, there was a few other iterations of a similar concept that we work on together on the side. But throughout that experience, I was able to teach myself some sort of kind of like a front end CSS, HTML, as well as you know, some back end database functionality, SQL, MySQL, and things like that.
Okay. So how did you guys meet and then decide to start a business together?
So I'll take that one, and then Chris can chime in if he'd like. But we met in college, so at UCF. We both attended UCF, and we met in 2005. I think it was our freshman year in astronomy class. And then we ended up being roommates that next year in 2006, 2007. And we've kind of kept in contact ever since, became really good friends. And then when Chris came back from FSU after getting his urban planning degree is when he started kind of the very first iteration of Sensory, if you will. And I had been doing a few things on my own related to starting businesses. And I forget exactly how we came together to talk about doing something jointly. I don't know if you remember, Chris, but eventually we just started talking about it. We're like, yeah, let's try this together.
Yeah. Was that how it happened, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, more or less, I don't really remember either. It's been a while. We've been working together now. So the details are kind of lost on me. I we lived together in college. We were friends. We didn't kill each other then. We were both relatively ambitious and had complementary skills. So we said, hey, let's try and do something together and see what happens. I think that it was kind of a casual thing, and then it gradually coalesced from there.
Sure. Now, something that the audience may or may not know if they know you guys, but now you guys have this business, Sensory, which is a real estate matchmaking company focused on neighborhoods, not relationships, right? Mm-hmm. But you guys are entrepreneurs, but you're also in the workforce yourself. Is that right?
Correct.
Cool. So for people listening in, they have jobs. They are in the workforce. They are providing a tremendous amount of value for the groups that they work, but they also have this incredible business that they're building. So they get to experience kind of the best of both worlds. Could you guys maybe talk a little bit about what that looks like, or maybe one of you guys could grab that, like what's that look like and what are the benefits of that for people listening in?
Sure, I can jump on that to an extent. Unless you were Chris, did you want to jump in?
No,
on that?
I have my own thoughts, but I'll wait until you're done.
All right, okay. Go for it, Cole.
Yeah, we probably have different thoughts on this. A lot of times, Chris and I see things completely differently, and I think that's what makes us somewhat of a good team at times. It can be frustrating, but you get two very different viewpoints on the same topic. For me, it's been both something that I think is, I'm very fortunate to be able to work and make money so I can continue living my life and have the opportunity to have the time to start a company as well. So I found myself in a very unique situation. I used to work a corporate finance job full time, and I just asked them one day, I said, hey, is it okay if I go part time? I was really scared to ask because I thought they might just say, oh, you want to start your own company, but you still want to stay here too. You can just quit and leave. But that didn't happen. And when I asked, it was actually a very positive response. All three of my managers, my manager, my direct manager, his manager, and then the finance director, I spoke to all three of them in one day, were all very supportive. And they were like, yeah, that's really awesome that you want to go out and do this. And my direct manager also had a time in his life where he did something similar. So he could relate to wanting to go out to start something on your own. So they were like, yeah, I think we can do this for you. You've been a valued employee. You bring value to the table. We think we can make that happen. So in that essence, I've been very fortunate. And I'm very happy that they gave me the opportunity to kind of simultaneously work on two different goals. They know my intent is to eventually leave and work for my company full time, but I'm not quite there yet. And that's when it becomes a little bit of a point of frustration. Having been part time now for over 2 years, it can almost be embarrassing at times because people are like, hey, didn't you go part time like 2 years ago to start your own company? And you're like, yeah, it's really freaking hard. It's way harder than you might think if you've never tried. And then the fact that we've completely pivoted our old company, Movers Atlas, is what I went part-time for, and that is no more. And Sensory has since taken its spot. So in that same time span, it's easy to lose sight of that we were pursuing one company, knew that wasn't going to work, and totally pivoted to a different company. So it's really been kind of two different endeavors over that time span. But when people ask you at the office, hey, what's the latest status? What's going on with you guys? You're not making any money yet? You're not making any progress? And it's like, oh, God, I don't want to have this conversation again. So for me, it's both a positive, and it can be a little point of maybe embarrassment or frustration at times that things haven't gone faster and I don't have better answers for the questions that are asked.
Sure. Hey, Chris, what's your thoughts on this?
Okay. My thoughts are, well, I'll kind of take Cole's and tack. In terms of having that conversation with my boss, it was also a very positive conversation. I was also freaked out about it. And my boss, actually, we're a very small company anyway. And so he understood straight away, that desire to build something for yourself and so forth. So he was very supportive. It has been beneficial in the sense that both for my boss and for me personally, there's a lot of crossover skills and kind of more on the engineering side of things. There's a finite number of problems in the world, especially when it comes to mapping. And so the more of them you encounter, the better you are at your job in a number of different circumstances. So from that perspective, it's been very positive. It's also, it allows you to maintain some degree of financial security, which at this point in my life, I kind of need. I can't really nearly as easily just drop everything and, pursue something as I could have maybe straight out of college. On the downside, as Cole said, everything takes longer. Everything is more frustrating. You're spread more thinly, and you just don't have a lot of time at all. So there's a quality of life issue there, but it's like everything else in life, it's a trade-off. So if I could give anybody advice, especially if they're coming straight out of school or they're in a financial position to just go ahead, try something, I would say just go ahead and pursue what you're interested in. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. If you've got that freedom, you should do it, in my opinion, and do it full time.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I really appreciate your, both your honesty and insights into this, because I think a lot of times entrepreneurs are having the same anxieties or thoughts that, that you guys had at the time. And, people are really open to work with you, especially if you're, honest and upfront about it. I think that side hustles, and I think that building businesses on the side and multiple streams of income, I believe that is actually, good, because you were able to have a major pivot. Like, if you guys were in that full time, like that major pivot could have like really done some damage. So there's some definitely positive and negatives in it. In this, how do you guys, in terms of partnership, how do you guys have it structured in terms of like roles and responsibilities, and how do you guys determine those kind of things?
That's a good question, because I don't think, if we're being honest, I don't think we have that clearly defined internally. There are four of us on the team. You can hear Chris laughing, so I think he would agree. there are four of, and he might have a different viewpoint than I do. We'll find out here in a second. There's four of us on a team, and we tend to try and be mostly agreeable on any big decision. As far as individual tasks are concerned, we each kind of have our niche. Like I said, I'll do the front end design, and then a lot of the miscellaneous business administrative type tasks. I'll do all the finances for the company. And then we do have a true back-end developer. That is Travis, and that's his wheelhouse. And then our fourth is Joe, and he kind of does our marketing / AdWords, and some to an extent sales as well. So that's kind of how we're divvied up. I'll let Chris talk about kind of his roles and responsibilities and how he sees kind of the decision structure.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess, but a productive mess. It's not, we don't have real clearly defined roles. We have this sort of like nebulous area that we mostly have dominion over, and then those nebulous areas all sort of overlap, which is probably not a very efficient way to run an organization. But, you know, given that it's four people and we're always moving quickly, there are also a lot of benefits to that because it allows everybody to kind of have, you know, everybody sees things with their own perspective. A lot of, most of the time we're on the same page. So that's kind of reinforcement, like, oh, this isn't a terrible idea. It also helps us avoid working in a vacuum on things. When that has happened, usually we get off track pretty quickly. So I would agree with Cole in that we have, you know, areas that we work on most of the time. Most of my time is spent on mapping stuff, but, you know, every once in a while, chime in on a, you know, business development or something of that nature. And but we do try and get aligned on things, both for interpersonal reasons, it makes it easier to work together, but also because that process helps us vet the idea or initiative, whatever it might be.
Excellent.
I do think Chris downplayed a little bit of what he did, but I also think he's taking it from his perspective, from an outsider perspective, a listener. Mapping stuff really is, if you think it's it, what Chris does is the backbone of the algorithm. So to kind of put that in perspective, the product wouldn't function at all with what he does, even though you don't see a map on our platform, right? All of this kind of geospatial.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to jump into that more, Chris, but what he does is the backbone and the foundation of the algorithm that was built. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear. And it's a very important role because without it, the product doesn't function.
Well, thank you. That makes me feel good. But yeah, you're right. I did just glaze over that. Yeah, I do all the database maintenance and everything that makes, and I make sure everything's accurate and, well, as accurate as it can be anyway, and make sure everything is aligned in such a way that our system functions. Right.
Yeah. Now this is pretty neat. How old is this company?
I would say we launched our very first MVP, like bare bones, like nobody probably liked it at all, product last April 2017.
Awesome. And you guys are actually making money, right?
Yes. We hit that milestone in April 2018. That was quite a big deal.
That's a big milestone for, you know, a technology company to actually start making money. So talk to us about how you guys make money. You guys don't have to give away any secret sauce or anything, but like, how do you guys go ahead and make money in this marketplace? What's the business model?
The simplest explanation of our business model, well, the business model is quite simple. It's real estate leads. So if we have somebody who's on our platform that's interested in purchasing a home and they let that interest be known, then they can become a lead that gets passed on to a brokerage who can hopefully help them find the home that they want in the neighborhood that they found on our platform, and all parties are happy. So that's the simplest explanation.
Okay. Well, I think that's a pretty good explanation. So you guys help find opportunities. So people online searching and they go, hey, I want to move to Orlando. And then they start doing a search and they go, I like lots of trees and I like swimming pools and I like this and that. And you guys start using your algorithm to put it together and say, you should look here and here are some people that can help you. Is that how it works?
Yeah, essentially. So if you're looking to rent, right? So we've partnered with Apartment Hunters. If you're looking to rent an apartment and you'd like some assistance doing that, you'll be able to work with them and they'll help you find an apartment in an area that fits your needs. And again, if you're looking to buy a home, our customers on that end are brokerages. So we're looking to work with various brokers in the area that will help those leads find those homes. So if you're looking for trees and pools and kind of a more suburban environment, perhaps our algorithm says, hey, you should look in Oviedo. And then if you look in Oviedo and you decide, oh, I really like Oviedo, I want to live there. Hey, I like Oviedo. Like they tell us, we can say, oh, you like Oviedo? That's awesome, because we can hook you up with somebody in Oviedo who's going to help you find a place to live.
Awesome. 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 As this is building, you guys, you know, have had some pivots and you guys are, you know, started making money in April and you guys are growing this business. Like What do you think are some of the major like learnings that you guys did from not making money to making money? Like, what are some of the things that you're like, man, I wish we knew that a year ago?
Oh man, I think Chris and I probably have a lot of thoughts on this topic. My biggest thought is after making money, this might sound completely stupid. But for me personally, it was after we started making money, it was the revelation that it's like, oh, we're actually starting to make a business. Because for so long, we were very product focused and it was a lot about the technology. And it wasn't until the technology was about where we wanted it and we were able to scrap together a business model that made some sense. And actually people were like, yeah, we'll give this a shot. We'll pay you. Where we were like, oh, damn, this is a business. Wait a second. We're missing all these other components. All we had was the technology. And now we're like, we need to assemble everything else that makes a successful business around the technology, right? You need to build those relationships with the customers who are going to pay you. Because we kind of have two customers, the people moving who don't pay to use the service, and then the brokers who help people find a place to live. So it's building those relationships. And then there's sometimes additional technology between us and the brokers that need to be built to help facilitate those relationships, the sales cycles, marketing. So all these other things that were kind of on the periphery while building the product just come front and center almost immediately. And you're like, oh, wow. Now there's like six other things we need to worry about on top of product. So it makes it a much bigger scope and kind of really just like, wow, okay, this is where we're at. I did not see that a year ago. I should have, but I didn't. So I don't really know what that says about our foresight on that respect, but I think it's one of those things where if you don't experience it, it's hard to learn. Somebody could tell you, and we've probably been told this 20 times, but until you experience it and live it, then you're like, oh, okay, here's all the components. This is what we really need. That's my perspective. I don't know. Chris, what's yours?
Well, I had a lot of revelations, some good, some bad, but I'll just do the one from the other day. It hit me the other day that, and I should say that I'm coming at this from the perspective of the technology. I don't really get involved too much with the sales end of things or anything like that. So as a, you know, technologist, I had the realization that technology alone, because we built some, you know, in my opinion, at least some pretty interesting, some code over the past year or whatever. And we are, however, not the, you know, only fish in the sea. We are a very small minnow, and there are much, much larger, more competitive organizations around that we have to compete against, who might very well, you know, best us. And it occurred to me that the technology that we've created, while cool, is really only a means to an end. And that end is to create good relationships with the people who are going to be buying our leads or working with us in whatever fashion. At the end of the day, our relationships with those folks, pending we can cultivate them, are what are going to be our competitive advantage. The technology is cool and is neat right now. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's the relationships that provide us or will provide us, hopefully, with a competitive advantage.
That's a great way to take a look at it. Chris, how did you all come up with the name Sensory?
oh, man. So Cole will have to chime in on this. But the upshot is that we were initially trying to just create a platform that would convey more of a sense of place. Like, what is it actually like to be there and walk around and whatever? And we'd still very much like to incorporate that. I think that's very important. But Cole actually came up with the idea for the name by sort of like sensory, you know, experience or whatever, I think. Cole, do you want to chime in there? Did I sum that up right?
Yeah. This is when we were in Starter Studio. So we were in the Starter Studio idea stage incubator in 2016 with Movers Atlas. And by the end of that experience is when we finally started to realize that Movers Atlas probably wasn't going to be the business we thought it might be. So that's when we started the beginnings, kind of the ideas of sensory just started floating around in our head, and we're like, oh man, we need a name change. And by we, it was probably just me. And we're like, we gotta get a new name. We're doing a new thing. We need a new name. And like Chris said, it was very much about feeling, conveying the feeling of being somewhere without physically being there. That was kind of the core premise. How do we convey to somebody what it's like to walk through Baldwin Park when they're not in Baldwin Park? So I was brainstorming with a few of the other Starter Studio companies one day. And I'm like, man, what kind of name could we use? So we were thinking of things like Sense, and then Area kind of popped up. And somebody was like, why don't you just use Area Sense? And I was like, that's a great name. Somebody already has it and uses it. So we can't do that. So they were like, why don't you do like Sense Area? I'm like, okay, Sense Area. And then they're like, okay, well, let's just smash it together. And we're like, oh, sensory, that's sensory. It's, I don't know. And then it just kind of morphed. And then we're like, okay, sensory. Oh, we can't spell it the way we want to spell it. So then we had to spell it a little bit weird. And that's kind of how the name came up. It was just kind of a brainstorm session with a few other people in the Starter Studio talking about like feelings and places. And then that popped up, sensory.
Nice. How do you guys, you know, for the audience members listening in, you know, you guys acquire people going, hey, I want to move to Orlando. And then you kind of go, these are the directions. This is where you should go. These are the neighborhoods that match you, right? So you start doing that. But then on the back end, you guys have brokered deals and with real estate agents and groups of people. Like, talk to us about how to approach those kind of deals. How did you start doing that? Because that was a pivotal thing from having, you know, making no money to, you know, making money.
Yeah. So I've headed up the sales, but I will say I've had the most luck with sales.
And can I chime in real quick?
Yeah.
Yes. Go for it, Chris.
Okay. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say we would still be making $0 if it were not for Cole. Cole has been the guy who's cultivated these relationships. So not that I haven't tried, but he's done an excellent job. That is all.
Thank you, Chris. I don't know if I would use the word excellent.
Yeah.
Well, he did a better job than I think the other three would have done. You know, myself.
Yeah, included, yeah. So. And because, like we talked about earlier, my formal background is in finance. I've kind of self-taught some of the development. So sales is something that's new to everybody on the team. Again, we're a more technical team. So our fourth member, who was kind of sales was his domain. He lives in South Florida, down in Boynton Beach. So not being in Orlando, which is currently the only geographic area that we serve, has been difficult. So because of that, kind of I'm in Orlando. I have some business experience, having a business degree and a finance background. I'm like, okay, all right, I've kind of navigated this before in the past. But to be honest, I would say it's very much like dating. It just feels like dating. You're gonna get no, 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 no. All right, yeah, let's grab a drink. And then that drink might turn into a second, but most likely it won't. It's gonna be one drink and that's it. So it's just persistence and trying. I mean, that's really what I've done. I've had a lot of luck on LinkedIn. And I don't know if that's just blind luck or if because LinkedIn's a more professional network, doing any sort of cold outreach via LinkedIn is more beneficial or people are more open to it. But that's kind of been my preferred route, is to target specific companies or individuals on LinkedIn, mainly start with a company and then try to find individuals for that company that you think might be the right person or they might be able to connect you to the right person. That's kind of been my strategy. And so, go ahead.
No. So this is really good. You guys are going into all sorts of great information for the audience. Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned, you know, right now you guys are serving, you know, Orlando with sensory. Are you guys planning on taking that information and going into different cities, growing in, you know, different states and taking sensory on a national level?
Ideally, yeah, I think that would be the long-term strategic vision, is at least coverage of the entire U.S. or a large portion of it. Chris can chime in here because he's kind of the guy who would be doing that expansion.
Okay, so I'm gonna completely diverge from Cole here. I am completely jaded with the idea of expanding beyond the state of Florida. I'm completely jaded with the idea of raising funding for expansion. I just we just had a kind of a rough few weeks, so I'm still kind of on the tail end of my anger phase. But so we in an ideal world, yes. Now the asterisk there is, again, we're not the only players in this game. We're small, and there are much bigger, better funded organizations who could probably outcompete us there. So the question in my mind is, what is the exploitable niche that we can fill in a timely enough fashion to be competitive? And I'm not sure that, given our difficulty in basically any kind of fundraising, trying to fill a national, kind of having a national footprint is realistic. Coupled with the fact that just from from the perspective of a urban planner mapping guy, I just feel like there's so much more I can convey, if I sink the time into it. And so that's kind of a little bit of an internal debate we're having right now is, how do we want to proceed? Where do we want to move?
Sure. Now, throughout this conversation, each of you have really lifted up each other. I'm just observing this, and I'm sure people are listening in. So when Chris was talking about map, and he's like, I help with the map stuff. And Cole's like, well, that's actually like the backbone of the business. And then when we were talking about sales, Cole's like, well, I kind of help with sales. And Chris is like, no, like we would have $0 if it wasn't for you. You guys are very encouraging. So it sounds like there's a culture of encouragement there. Has there ever been a time, let's take it the other way, has there ever been a time where there's just gone straight to fisticuffs or major arguments? Because you guys have four team members and that are coming in, a lot of different opinions. And have you guys ever come up with a very difficult argument or a decision?
Oh, yes. Oh yes.
Give us some.
there have been times where, and Cole and I tend to disagree the most fiercely, I would say. There have been times where I don't know if Cole has yelled at me, but I've certainly yelled at Cole, because I get pretty geared up when people start getting in, especially my mapping stuff. I can be real territorial. So that was not the correct thing to do. It's worth noting that I regret that. But we disagree, I would say, on a pretty regular basis. We try and keep everything pretty civil. I mean, at the end of the day, I like the guys that I work with, and I respect them all. So that helps. I know that everybody brings unique skills to the table. They might have a different way of looking at things. And I might get temporarily, agitated or whatever. But at the end of the day, everybody respects everybody else, and that I find is hugely helpful. We've had some significant arguments, but we also know that we can't really function without one another, So, and sometimes I've acquiesced, I had one idea of how I wanted the product to go. And had we pursued that, it would have looked very different than it does today. And everybody else thought the neighborhood cards were the way to go. And so I said, well, I feel really strongly, but at the end of the day, I'm the only guy. So I'm going to, support you guys in this, and I'm going to complain about it a lot.
Yeah. I would say, going off of what Chris said, the two times where we probably had the most difficulty determining how to go forward was the time Chris just mentioned, where it was, do we do a more, and I might get this a little wrong because I don't know exactly what Chris was, well, no, I know what he was advocating for. So if I get this wrong in memory, Chris, correct me.
Sure.
But more of a map-based interface. Right now, our interface is very, we have what we call neighborhood cards. So it's a page for every neighborhood. That kind of conveys the information about that neighborhood. I think under the other paradigm, it was going to be a very Google Map-based interface. Everything was going to be on a Google Map, very stylized, and all the information was going to be accessible there. So you're thinking, oh, Google Maps, kind of one interface, and then no map at all, another interface. So that was like one junction as a team where we spent hours upon hours upon hours debating it and going back and forth. And then I would say the most recent one in my memory that got a little heated was kind of the business model. When we had a particularly rough meeting one day, we came out of that meeting and we're like, okay, this is just an external group. We're like, all right, we got to get our stuff together. Our business model is not clear, is not conveyable to anybody but other people than the team. So we really had to sit down that afternoon and figure out, okay, well, what specifically do we want our business model to be and what will it look like? In retrospect, leads makes perfect sense, and why it took us so long to come to that realization, I don't know. I can't answer that, but that was kind of a heated, stressful day.
Yeah. So talk to us about maybe a failed business model. Like, so right now you guys do lead. So a lead comes in, it's a free for the user. You know, I'm looking to move into Orlando and I go on and it spits out my name, Josh Wilson, and email address, phone number, blood type and all that other stuff. Right.
But yeah.
And then you guys take that lead and provide them a connection with the absolute best agent that farms that area. Right. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about a failed business model that you pivoted from.
Our very first business model. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Our triple opt-in model comes to mind. And I will just say this, that we used to be very nice boys and then we discovered capitalism. So I'll leave it at that and I'll let Cole take it away. I think that's where you're going, right?
I wasn't going there, but I will touch on it for a second. Okay. Yeah, we used to have a model that required essentially the user to triple opt-in to become a lead. And that sounds really good on the user's end. And it can or cannot be, depending on how you look at it, but it makes it very difficult from a business model end. You know, once the user gives you the go-ahead to connect, you should make that connection as soon as possible. You shouldn't wait for other actions to occur to make that connection. Yeah. So that's one of them. And then I was going to say our very first business model was actually a user-paid model, where if you wanted to use our service, you had to pay for it. That completely flopped, 100%. It was a freemium, basically a freemium model. You could use these select things for free, but if you wanted the whole thing, you'd have to pay. I think all but three people actually clicked the link to potentially pay, but then immediately backed out. So that flopped pretty hard.
That was a big failure, huh? But you guys learned a lot, and you did some pivots, and now you guys are making money and doing good, and you guys are growing. What stage of business do you think you guys are at in terms of you know, where you are? Or, you know, Chris, you have a hesitancy about, you know, fundraising and moving that direction. Like, are you guys just going to keep on organically growing? Are you going to go look for fundraising later on, strategic partners, build out the sales? Like, where do you think you guys are at and where are you guys going?
Well, we've, you know, this is something that's actually an ongoing conversation over the course of this week. But I think we've tentatively agreed that we are not hitting our goal for kind of domestic content. So content in the Orlando area. It's not really fulfilling the, you know, the need of the user. And we think if we can up that content a little bit, we can get more conversions. So we've agreed on that. On the other hand, we think that by incorporating more information about the home itself and actually making that a little bit more kind of front and center, perhaps even doing some survey questions related to the home, like you mentioned pools before. You know, we don't have that right now, but it would be very simple to implement. So we're thinking about doing some tweaks here in Orlando to generate better conversions, and then hopefully applying those lessons learned moving outward. We have a lot of data and everything cached and ready to process, but we don't necessarily want to just start growing if we haven't we haven't fully nailed down the process that's going to be good yet. You know, we're doing okay, but there's a lot of room for improvement. So I think we're trying to refine that where we know the area pretty well. And Cole can jump in here. I think I mostly am aligned with him on this, but feel free to critique me, Cole.
Yeah, no, I think we're in a stage I would say kind of a little bit of revision, right? We're always learning. We're always learning what works and what doesn't. And over these past, I would say since April, May, we've had the most users we've ever had. So we've had the most traffic come through, which has given us the most data, which is giving us the most data to analyze and draw conclusions on what's working and what's not. So we're in a time where we're doing a lot of revision. We've collected all of this data over the past few months, and we're now really starting to see a little bit of trends, right? It takes a while to collect enough data to see some trends. So now that we are seeing some trends on what's working and what's not, we're like, okay, what do we need to do to the product to make it better based upon the data that we're seeing? What's working? How can we enhance what's working? Or what's working, don't touch that because it's doing exactly what we want it to do. So I would kind of sum it up as just a stage of refining the product and the process, especially for the people moving, but also for the customers buying our leads, the brokerages. We're kind of refining those relationships a little bit and the technical processes and procedures around those, how we communicate the leads, how we process the leads. I think we're under a very heavy revision timeline, and we're close to being done. So we've gotten a lot of ideas. We've implemented many of them. There's quite a bit more to be implemented, but I'd say we're over that 50% mark. And then to kind of get back to what Chris was saying about the data cached and ready for expansion, I think then that puts us in a good position to expand with a kind of a template to a new city that we know should work because it works in Orlando. We're not still tinkering with it. It's like we've kind of dialed it in and we're like, this is the template. Okay, take this template from City A to City B to City C to City D.
That's good, man. That's good. All right, so let's have some quick questions back and forth. Chris, this question's for you. If you could give a piece of advice for entrepreneurs out there who are looking to build a business of their own in technology or real estate or something, and you could give them a piece of advice armed with a resource, a book, a movie, something that you think would be beneficial, what advice would it be, and what resource would it be to the community?
So the advice and the book need to, or whatever, need to be like grouped, needs to be one and the same, or?
It's your rules, man. You make it how you want.
Oh, okay. I can just come up with that. Okay. All right. So the first thing I can say from personal experience is don't try and go it alone. You, no matter how brilliant you think you are, do not have all of these skills you're going to need to, or all the time for that matter, to create a successful business. So I would be honest with yourself about what you think your weaknesses are and find somebody to complement them. I really don't believe that we would have gotten as far as we have without the contributions of everybody on the team. So in terms of a specific book or resource, trying to think.
It could even be a movie or a TV show.
Yeah, a movie or trying to think. Oh, you know what? Cole's going to probably be a little upset with me for this, but I will steal a book from him that I complained about, actually. And that is Slicing Pie is a good way to divvy up your, I know, I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry. I froze. Choke. It's a good way to divvy up your equity according to cash contributions, but also the amount of effort and labor put forth. So it's a pretty good resource.
Yeah, so he stole your thunder. Great book, by the way. And he was actually in Orlando, the author of Slicing Pie, not too long ago, giving a conversation about that. So there's some really great things popping through Orlando. That's a great book for co-founders to take a look at. And how do you divvy up equity to advisory team, to workers, to co-founders, all the way through? Great answer. and I'm glad that I asked you first because you kind of stole Cole's. But now I'm turning it to Cole. Now, Cole, I'll give you a different question then, all right, to kind of put you on the spot. If you could go forward in time and give yourself some advice, so where you are now, and you could go forward in time to give yourself some advice, what advice would you give to your future self?
That's interesting because usually it's your past self.
Yeah.
So what advice would I give my future self? I do have to mention that Chris did steal my answer because that would have been the book I would have said. And that was one of the pointless times where the team argued a lot. So, but we did eventually use the book. It did happen. And I would still recommend it. It's fantastic. And I did go see Mike Moyer speak when he was here in Orlando. Good. But to get back to the question.
Sorry, man.
What advice my future self? That's kind of perplexing. Yeah, you totally flipped it. That's actually a really good question, though, because people don't really think about what would... I would say, I don't know, and maybe this is kind of advice to my present self, too. But I've started to think about, well, what if your company does succeed? What does it look like? Is it something that you really actually want to do once it's up and running? And what role do you want to have in that kind of infrastructure or that company? But also beyond that, like, what do you want your life to look like? Like, those are things I really didn't think about for a really long time. I was mainly focused on, I want to have a company, I want it to be successful. And that was kind of like a sole singular focus. But I never asked myself, don't lose sight of the what happens once you get there. Because I think it's a little bit easy to lose sight of that. It's like, okay, so say you do achieve the goal, but then what? What's next? What's there? Don't make the achieving the goal like binary. It's like you get there and it's like, oh God, I'm lost. Now what? I don't know what to do next. So I'd say that's a little bit of something that I lost sight of and recently have started to kind of think about. But if I were to give my future self, knowing myself, I think I know myself at least somewhat, I'd probably lose sight of that again. So it would be a reminder to my future self to not lose sight of that.
There you go, man. Sorry to throw that curveball at you guys, but you know, I like your guys' style. So I know you guys can handle it. All right. So people listening in the audience, if they want to learn more about Sensory, learn more about you guys, connect with you guys because they liked your style, or they have some ideas for you, they have some relationships that they have for you, or just something, right? How could people find you and connect with you?
Okay, well, they can find us at sensory.com. That's S-E-N-S-A-R-I-E. So that's the first place. They can find Cole at Cole Brick on Twitter. You can find me on LinkedIn, on Facebook. And then if you want to follow Sensory, it's at Sensory App on both Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Excellent. And what we'll do is we'll include those links in the show notes. You guys provide me all those links and I'll pop them in there. So people listening in go, you know what? Those guys are pretty interesting. Love to have a conversation with them. And, you know, I'll put all those links in the show notes. Chris, are there any questions that I should have asked you that I totally just forgot to ask you?
Oh man. No, I don't think so. I think we hit on all of the, you know, kind of the high level stuff that would be, you know, interesting to a general audience. You know, I don't think we want to get into the nitty gritty of mapping. So, no, I think we're in good shape.
Awesome. Cole, did I miss anything?
I don't think you missed anything. I do think we got to give a shout out to the Orlando tech community, specifically Starter Studio. We would not be here today if it wasn't for them. The Idea Stage Incubator was a huge help. Even though the company we entered with was not the company we left with, you know, it set us on the course where we are today and kind of led to this neighborhood matchmaking concept that we eventually built. So a shout out to them, a big thanks. And if you're thinking about starting a company, you know, they're a great resource.
Yeah, definitely shout out to Starter Studio downtown. Great group of people. building some incredible things. There's a lot of great businesses that have gone through there and that are going through there. So definitely a shout out there. So ladies and gentlemen, listening into the show, really appreciate you guys being here in Orlando, building great things in Orlando. Let me ask you guys one other question. I like to ask everyone this. Why Orlando for you guys? Either one of you guys could answer this.
Yeah, I'll let Chris chime in on that one. I have my own thoughts, but he was the guy born and raised here, so I think he's most qualified to answer it.
Well, okay. This is not going to be a flattering answer, but basically convenience. I couldn't find a job after I graduated, so I boomeranged back here. That was during the Great Recession, and then I just stayed. So. So I'm here because, you know, that's kind of how fate dictated things were going to go. Now, that being said, I like Orlando. I think there's a lot of really good resources here. I don't want to move. But as to why I am here at all, it's really just a series of, you know, random events, I guess.
It's fate, Chris. It's fate that brought
you.
Yeah,
there we go. Yeah.
What about you, Cole?
I came to Orlando to attend UCF, so it was back in, 2000, early 2000, 2004 now. And, you know, Orlando doesn't get the credit that I think it deserves in terms of a place to live, to kind of carry out a nice, comfortable lifestyle. I was very, very much in my UCF bubble when I went to UCF, and when I finally broke out of that bubble and lived other places outside of the UCF area, I was like, oh, man. Orlando's actually got a lot to offer. And then with the kind of the opening of Starter Studio and the ton of other additional resources that have sprung up for the startup community, that's really something that aided us and helped us as well. I mean, some of the early events, before OTA was OTA, Orlando Tech Association, they were just like a group of guys meeting every, I think, third Thursday to just demo the products they were building. So they kind of got us into the ecosystem. We learned a lot and then kind of propelled us to where we are here. So Orlando is a great place to be, a great place to headquarter and kind of just start in a region that we know and a region that we like, you know, a region that we live in, that we enjoy. It wouldn't make sense to start anywhere else.
Man, I like it. I like it.
That's a much better answer.
Hey, Chris, from now on, if someone asks you, just say, man, it was fate.
Yeah, that's right. Keep it short and sweet, yeah.
Fate and destiny. I love Orlando, right? So that was a fun conversation with you guys. Thanks for coming on the show, sharing your story, sharing, just so honest. Like, this has been like a conversation that you would have around, you know, a bar or a table or something. So I appreciate your all's honesty and your candor in this. Thank you.
Sure. No problem.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, fellow entrepreneurs listening into this Orlando Entrepreneur Show, thank you for listening in. Hope to see you guys on the next episode. All right. Goodbye, everyone. See you, Cole. See you, Chris.
See ya. Thank you.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.